ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey there, I'm Dominique Bayens, host of a new podcast I'm super excited to share with you. It's called Expanse, the NANUP 4, about the mysterious vanishing of four people 2 decades ago and their world of cults and hidden identities. Stick around after this episode of ABC News Daily to hear a teaser of what you can expect when episode 1 drops on March 3rd.
The Iran war is expanding and already having ripple effects across the globe. So, how long will it last? Well, Donald Trump says whatever it takes. But as for the end game, that's increasingly unclear. Today we speak with Rana Dadpour, who fled the brutal Iranian regime in 2012 and founded the group Australian United Solidarity for Iran. I also speak with international relations expert Rajan Menon about why this could be a long war. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily.
Outside the Iranian embassy, euphoria fills the suburban street.
Super happy, one of the best days of my life.
It's the greatest, greatest news.
This is not the war. This is the rescue mission.
Rana, tell me about how the Iranian diaspora is feeling now. We saw many people celebrating in the streets in Australia over the death of the supreme leader. But it must be also such a deeply worrying time.
There are so many mixed emotions right now. And as you mentioned, yes, there's been a lot of celebration over the weekend because of the death of and elimination of Khamenei, who has been responsible for killing of Iranians for a few decades now. Many of us have lost family members and friends under his order because of the executions that he ordered or the massacre of Iranians 2 months ago. So that was something really to celebrate for many people because it gave them a sense of justice. But at the same time, yes, bombs are falling and many people have lost connections with their family. Of course, everyone is worried for the safety and security of their loved ones and their families.
Yeah, I'm sure. And you still have family there. Have you been in contact with them?
I have many family members there, basically, and most of them. My parents are in Iran. I could talk to my mother over the weekend, but very short. But that was it. And since then, I have not heard back. And I don't know if they are safe or not. I don't know.
You must be so worried.
Yes. What this regime does, it's really brutal because whatever happens, no matter if it's a protest, if it's an uprising, if bombs are falling, the first thing they do is to disconnect internet. To keep people away from the news and what is happening. Like, but that's so cruel because people right now don't know what to do inside Iran, where to go. There are no bomb shelters in Iran. And the disconnection of internet also prevents us who are in diaspora to send information to our family and at least help them in some ways to find their ways to safety.
And Rana, another concerning thing must be that we just don't know how long this war might last. The US Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, he says it won't be a forever war like we saw in Iraq.
To the media outlets and political left screaming endless wars, stop. This is not Iraq. This is not endless.
But then Donald Trump says he's willing to keep it going for as long as needed, more than perhaps the 4 to 5 weeks that they initially predicted.
But, we have capability to go far longer than that. We'll do it. Whatever somebody said today, they said, oh, well, the president wants to do it really quickly. After that, he'll get bored. I don't get bored. There's nothing boring about this.
That must be incredibly concerning for people like you.
it really brings us fear, and you know, we don't know what's going to happen inside Iran, or for how long does it take.
Yeah, and Donald Trump wants Iranians to rise up again. But as you say, that's just so dangerous, isn't it? What do you think of him saying that?
It is very dangerous right now. I mean, like, bombs are falling. How would you expect Iranian people right now to get out? But at the same time, there are so many rooftop chantings happening right now inside Iran. At nighttime, people go and chant against the regime. I think that's the safest way that they can find in order to raise their voice and say what they think about all that is happening inside Iran. I do believe that the hope they are holding right now in Iran, the civilians and people inside Iran, would help them to rise up when it is safe to do so. But at the moment, with the bombs falling, I don't think any sane person would expect them to do that.
All right. Well, Rana, if you had a message for your family, for your parents, what would it be?
Mom, I love you. Daddy, I love you. I hope you're safe, and I hope that after all this that you've gone through, you see a free, secular Iran, a prosperous country that you've been always fighting for.
I'm Rajan Menon. I'm a professor emeritus at the City College of New York and a senior research fellow at the Saltzman Institute at Columbia University.
Rajan, this war is clearly expanding. The US is committing more forces. Iran's fight back is pretty extensive at this point. Just tell me what we're seeing and the significance of it.
I think that the Iranians have prepared for this. They may go on fighting, but I think we're in for a long war, and a lot more people are going to start dying, unfortunately. This is no longer a war just with Iran. It's become a regional war. And what is happening that affects the rest of the world, a couple of examples. So the Strait of Hormuz, which is a thoroughfare through which about 100 ships every day go back and forth, most of them tankers. That's effectively been now closed. So oil prices already have jumped as much as 9%. The Iranians hit two gas facilities in Qatar. Qatar is a major producer of LNG. In Europe and Asia, LNG prices have gone up 45% already. And then just one other example. Iran is about 90% Shia. Most of the Muslims in the world are Sunni Muslims, and we don't need to get into the difference between Sunni and Shia. Suffice it to say that there are Shia populations of a substantial size in Iraq, in Pakistan, in India, and Bahrain, which is very near Iran. And there have already been demonstrations protesting the killing, because that's what it was, of Ayatollah Khamenei. And in Pakistan, I don't know what the latest count is, but the last time I checked, 22 people had died in clashes with the police. And in Lebanon, Hezbollah, that is a Shiite militia group very closely linked to Iran, it's also a political party, has tried to strike Israel, and Israel has struck back and killed a number of people there. So this is just within the last, you know, two or three days. So this is early days yet, and what we're seeing is very, very disturbing.
Well, Donald Trump says they're just getting started. Mm-hmm. He says they've hit more than 1,000 targets in Iran at this point. What do you think we should expect from here?
I think that they will keep hitting more targets. The question is, what is the objective? Is it so-called regime change? Now, the problem with the regime change is that you cannot achieve it from the air. You need activity on the ground. Now, Trump said today that if necessary, he's prepared to put ground troops into Iran. But, you know, just to think about the problem, right? Iran in land area is bigger than France and Germany and Spain put together. It's got 93 million people. It's going to be very difficult to put ground troops. I don't think he will do it. The Israelis certainly won't do it. I'll just say one more thing, Sam. This is a cruel and despotic regime. Let's be very clear about that. On the other hand, I think in many of the Western press reports, it would seem that the analysis is, well, this is a regime that rules purely by force and intimidation. It uses force and intimidation, there's absolutely no doubt. But one should not think that it lacks institutional depth, support in key institutions, and also support among the public that share the kind of conception of an Islamic polity that Ayatollah Khamenei supported. So this is the difficulty. This is not going to be like Venezuela, where it was, as we say here, a one and done. You do something really quick and get out.
And the Iranian regime, Rajan, is very much still intact, despite the Supreme Leader's death.
Correct.
Donald Trump now seems to have actually dropped regime change from his list of objectives.
Our objectives are clear. First, we're destroying Iran's missile capabilities, and you see that happening on an hourly basis, and their capacity to produce brand new ones, and pretty good ones they make. Second, we're annihilating their navy. We've knocked out already 10 ships. Third, we're ensuring that the world's number one sponsor of terror can never obtain a nuclear weapon. And finally, we're ensuring that the Iranian regime cannot continue to arm, fund, and direct terrorist armies outside of their borders.
How long do you think the Iranians can fight back? How extensive can this become?
You know, if it comes to simply a test of brute force, right, the United States and Israel together have far more firepower. This is an unequal contest in that way. But I think that a regime like Iran's can survive a long time. They learned from the last attack last year to name successors in intelligence agencies and military agencies. So they have some depth of personnel. They probably dispersed and reinforced their weapon sites. They have a very large stock of ballistic missiles. They haven't used their best ones yet. So they can go on for quite a long time, and they can bring about pain in other ways, economically, for example, right? Mm. So you might have a situation where neighboring Arab countries that are aligned with the U.S. who are taking it on the chin now come to Trump and say, look, you've got to find a way out. Trump now says, well, they want to negotiate, and, you know, I'll talk to them. Mr. Larijani, who seems to now be running the show, he's not a cleric, by the way, said Iran is not interested in talking to the United States at all because the last time we talked, you attacked us. So we could see this go on for a very, very long time. I don't think this is going to be a short war.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, where do the Gulf states that you mentioned there, like the UAE, Bahrain, where do they stand at this point? Because Iran is striking them beyond the U.S. military bases.
So the UAE in particular is very, very vulnerable. They've taken aim at airfields in Saudi Arabia. They're essentially saying to these countries, if you serve as a platform for the United States to launch missiles and aircraft from, we're going to come after you. Mm. And so they are putting pressure not just on the United States and Israel by retaliating. They're also putting pressure on American-friendly Arab states.
All right. Well, the proxy militant group Hezbollah, Iran's supporter, of course, it has now become involved. How significant is that?
You know, Hezbollah's already been bloodied quite a bit by the Israelis, and the Israelis have a lot of firepower. So a lot of people in Lebanon and other areas are probably going to get killed. The one wild card, and we haven't seen it yet, the Houthis in Yemen have been very closely affiliated with Iran, and they are in a position to take aim at shipping through the Red Sea. Whether they will jump into this, we don't know. There are lots of shoes to drop yet. And the Chinese and Russians, it's going to be interesting to see what they will do, because both are very closely tied to Iran. They're not going to send troops to save Iran, but we know already that they've provided some very significant systems to Iran. Iran has the Russian S-400 air defense missile, which is Russia's best air defense missile. The Chinese have given them supposedly a radar that is able to spot and track stealth aircraft. Now, how true this is and how many of these systems there are, I cannot tell you, but there have been very credible reports that both countries did this before the war began.
Well, Rajan, as we mentioned, the Iranian regime, it has been weakened, of course, but it's still very much standing. You think this could be a lengthy war. Now, just tell me, because Donald Trump initially, he says, 4 to 5 weeks. What do you think? How long could this last?
You know, the thing about it, Sam, is that nobody knows, because the thing about war is it's very easy to start it, right? It's much more difficult to end it, because it tends to kind of take on a logic of its own and throw surprises in the way of generals and policymakers that they didn't anticipate and quite don't know how to deal with.
Mm.
You can have the greatest war plan in the world, but when it makes contact with the ground, it often comes apart. And so if anyone tells you they know when this is going to end or how it's going to play out, don't believe them. And I certainly am not going to tell you that, because I don't know. All I can tell you is that already we're seeing this become a much wider war than just between Israel and the United States on the one hand and Iran on the other hand.
Rajan Menon is a professor emeritus of international relations at the City College of New York and a senior research fellow at the Saltzman Institute at Columbia University. I also spoke with Rana Dadpour, who fled Iran in 2012. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.
In the country, it's unusual to give away your chickens.
It's definitely going to raise eyebrows. Everyone in rural Australia knows you just don't give away laying chickens. So 2 decades ago, when a family on the outskirts of an isolated town called Nanup in Western Australia started getting rid of things.
And she's saying to Chantel, are you sure that you want to let go of these things?
People started noticing.
And Chantel said, yes, Leela's not going to need them anymore.
Daddy, stop doing that fight.
I'm Dominique Bayens, and I live and work about 45 minutes away from the little blue farmhouse where those 4 people lived and disappeared from.
The family lived a bizarre alternative lifestyle.
Chantel and Leela McDougall, Tony Popich and Simon Cadwell vanished in July 2007.
Hey, somebody do the castanets. I'm feeling all Latin now.
They left behind a note saying they'd gone to Brazil and rumours of a dark online cult swirling in their absence. They were never conclusively seen again.
They have not accessed their bank accounts or travelled overseas on their passports.
What began as a missing persons case morphed into an international investigation as evidence of secrets, hidden identities and a mysterious cult leader emerged.
He was working the room. It was like a car salesman trying to sell you a bomb.
Something wasn't right.
Outlandish theories became distinct possibilities.
He told someone online that he was planning a family suicide pact, but later changed his mind.
I always thought that was their grand plan, to go to South America. This is where I have to take a deep breath here all this stuff, because, yeah.
Why didn't we see any signs?
For months, I've been picking at the threads of this story to find out who the Nanup 4 were and what led them down the rabbit hole and into the face of disaster. And the further I've got, the more I've realised nothing is what it seems in this story.
I'm a non-gossip person, but it's very easy to hear lots of gossip.
Check that out.
He said, Chantel's got end time syndrome.
Oh boy,
he's weird.
To me, it was off the planet.
Very strange.
My son's going, what is going on?
That's what happens when you cheat, see? Namaste.
I was starting to think this is not going to end well.
There are so many people left behind looking for answers, all the while trying to face 2 stark possibilities. Was the disappearance a choice or was it murder?
Turns out he wasn't trying to hurt them.
Beat them all.
He was actually trying to warn them.
All trying to work out how to live with the choices they made or didn't make that led them here.
I just wished I'd asked a lot more questions no matter what.
I'll regret it till the day I die.
I'm Dominique Baines.
I didn't want to lose her.
I can't change the past.
And this is season 6 of Expanse, the Nanup 4.
You've got 2 choices, be strong or be weak.
Subscribe to Expanse to hear the whole story.